I went to St. Paul's Cathedral the other day, Adam. Do you think people know who don't live in England what St. Paul's Cathedral is? Maybe not, right? I don't know. It's famous, isn't it?
It's pretty famous. It's one of the main tourist ones. But I'm sure they want to know what the plot of St. Paul's Cathedral is and who directed it.
I did actually read about the history of St. Paul's Cathedral earlier, because when I was thinking, how famous is St. Paul's Cathedral? Anyway, it was until the 1960s, it was the tallest building in London. Yeah? God's building. Anyway, I'd never been... Have you ever been inside? I'd never been inside before. Have you ever been inside?
No, because I live here. Why would I ever do anything touristy like that?
No, I know. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, this isn't even the story. This is just the setting, the trappings
of
the story.
Sorry, interrupted. We could have got here.
No, I've taken us off on a really strange tangent. Anyway, I was inside St. Paul's Cathedral, not just so that I could whisper misgivings at the dead, although I did do that, but because it was my birthday recently and my wife bought me a very fun present, Adam. She bought us two tickets to go and see the London Film and Music Orchestra performing the songs of guess who?
Hans Zimmer.
Our favourite. It's Hans Zimmer. Yeah?
When you say guess who, by the way, you've got to let someone guess.
Oh.
Let me guess. You were totally not going to let me guess. You're going to go, guess who?
My favourite.
Yeah, guess who?
I was giving you a little bit of extra.
I don't need any.
I thought you wanted more help, because I didn't want you as a straight shooter to appear not to know the answer.
I would never need that. It's obviously going to be Hans Zimmer.
You're absolutely right. You knew it before I even said it. Just to be 100%, you already knew. But I was pretty excited, man. I thought this is going to be fun. I like Hans Zimmer. I like cathedrals.
So where's this? The Royal Albert Hall. Where's this at? The Royal Albert Hall.
Oh, that is good though. That is good.
No, is it? Where is it? Where's he playing?
St. Paul's Cathedral.
Oh, okay. So it does connect.
Oh, did you just think that was just a random other thing?
No. Oh, yeah, it's hard to tell because of the... But, oh, okay, right now it makes sense. The story's kind of clicking into gear. You went there to see Hans Zimmer.
That's right. I went there to see... Well, not to see Hans Zimmer. I went there to see the London Film and Music Orchestra performing the songs of Hans Zimmer. Point being, I get there with my wife. We sit down. People sit around us. I don't like that at a concert, you know, but listen, it's a popular show. There's not much you can do. I'm kind of crammed in. There's a sort of weird light next to me on the floor. And as soon as the concert starts, the light just keeps changing color and illuminating this massive statue that I'm sitting next to that I've just been whispering misgivings at. And it's kind of distracting and annoying. And, you know, I'm in a bad frame of mind from a starting point, yeah? And then, would you believe, the first song starts playing. It's, I turn to my wife and I say, this is a John Williams song. And she says, who's John Williams? And I said, you know, John Williams, who did all the popular hits. And then I reel off some of the hits. And she's like, oh, John Williams. I said, yeah, John Williams. She said, this is John Williams. I said, yeah, this is John Williams. Isn't this supposed to be Hans Zimmer? And she said, the ticket just says Hans Zimmer. And she showed me the ticket and it did say Hans Zimmer. Maybe it's Hans Zimmer and Friends. So I'm thinking, okay, fine. And then song two comes on.
What, by Blur? Jesus Christ. This concert's all over the place.
Fucking hell. Sorry. Oh, I left myself wide open there. And then the second song came on and it's Indiana Jones.
Right. This is good.
I'm like, this is still John Williams. You know, she's like, who? I'm saying, John, the one we were talking about before, John Williams. She's like, oh, yeah, John Williams. John Williams, yeah. Anyway, the whole first half is John Williams, and I'm thinking, okay, fine. It's going to be it's a half and half. So I was like, okay, fine. You know, I like John Williams as well. He's got some great hits. And it'll be more of a pop evening than I was expecting. There'll be more sort of middle ground and more, you know, big hits that the audience of the St. Paul's Cathedral will know. Anyway, it's half time. I'm a bit like pissed off because it's just been John Williams. We move to the back where there's like three empty rows, you know, so we can stretch out. We can talk a little bit more. Unfortunately, we have to watch some of the second half through someone's mobile phone because they film everything, even though it says don't film anything. And I don't know why. What the fuck are they doing? Why? When are they ever going to watch that ever again? The whole of Gladiator, the one thing I wanted to see. Do you know what I mean? I'm watching it through a man's phone. I wanted to throw shit at the back of his head. I was furious with this guy. And I'd worked up a whole fantasy. I was like, if he does it again, just one more time, in the next song, I'm going to fucking clamber over these chairs. I'm going to tap him on the shoulder and say, please don't do that, you know? I was, and then he didn't do it again, so I was left frustrated. But
That's why you've got to do it first time.
You just, like you, you just get it in there ASAP.
Because then it's right? done. Because as soon as you notice it, and if you don't do it, you are then still trapped in your head thinking about yep. when they're next going to do it and what you'd say. So
yep.
you either say it straight away and you be that person who is
yep.
finickety and a little Hitler. Or
like you.
Yeah, everyone knows like me. If they've listened to my anecdotes...
So people might be listening for the first time, so I just wanted to make sure that the new listeners know that that's you.
Yeah, I shush people in the cinema.
Yeah.
Not you know, when the lights are up, when the film is playing.
Sure.
You know, when it's suitably
not,
correct.
Not during the trailers.
Not during the trailers, although I do seethe about it, and yeah. I expect of them, course. Oh, here we go, here are the people, I've yeah. spotted them.
They're continuers. They're going to be continuers.
And if they give me one little in... they're going to get shushed. So yeah, anyway, going over old ground. So you can either you do that, either be that person, yeah. or you swallow it down and
yep.
you have to act like you don't care. And then until you don't care, you can't continue to seethe about it and do nothing. That's a middle ground.
That's what I did. I fucked it hard. I middle grounded the whole second half. That sort of ruined some of my experience. And also, unfortunately, they didn't play the music from The Lion King. I think, again, it's because this is a cathedral audience, right? This is a St. Paul's audience. And the famous thing from The Lion King is the songs, the soundtrack, rather than the score. They didn't do it. It's a bit more complicated. You probably need more people, some different instruments, whatever. I get it. The thing that annoyed me was the second half. The first half had all been John Williams. The second half, it started, and it was John fucking Williams at the beginning. And there were four, in this whole evening, there were four... pieces of music that were written by Hans Zimmer. The two, they did Inception yes. and Interstellar.
Yes, humdinger.
And in the Interstellar one, that was maybe the best of the evening. I don't love that film, but I think that music's lovely, and the keyboard player at the back really fucking got into it, and that was really fun to watch, you know. And also they turned the volume up a little bit, and it got a little loud in St. Paul's house. For the first time, the rest of it had been felt a little tame throughout the John Williams section. It was fun to watch the Harry Potter stuff. They did Harry Potter for John Williams, and I think sometimes it's easy to forget how actually brilliant that music is. You know, it's so silly and like childish, and I understand why. But if you think about how that music represents the whole story of Harry Potter, just in the sound of it, just in the kind of the tone. It's so good. It really captures, I think, what Harry Potter is. So, John Williams, I think it's amazing what he can do. But I don't feel that much when I'm listening to John Williams' music, other than maybe excited. You know?
That's because you don't feel anything about the movies. Your favourite movies are from Zimmer. It's Gladiator... and sure. The Lion King, and your yeah. emotions, that's your emotional sun, and it blocks yeah. out any possibility of anything from Spielberg and Williams getting yeah. in. You don't give a shit about Indiana Jones or Star
Not really,
Wars.
Although I did watch the first Indiana Jones last night. My wife had never seen any of them before, and she really enjoyed it, so we're going to do the rest. But I don't care about it, really.
It's not Williams' fault, it's your fault, right? Or maybe it's Spielberg's fault.
I think they're different. Here's my contention. I think Williams is a scientist and the best in the world, right? He is the best musical scientist in the world. He knows academically, intellectually, how to apply music to motion better than anybody else, probably ever. But Hans Zimmer is an artist. He writes with his heart. It doesn't always work, right? And it doesn't have the same... clinicality, but he's a fucking artist. He bleeds the music, yeah, and I just vibe with that harder. Yeah, you know what I'm saying, bro?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, you know, Williams is obviously pop. He's the Coldplay of soundtracks, and he's so inextricably linked with one director, is Steven Spielberg. So I don't know. I can't. There's no comeback for me when you say, if you say, oh, you know, Williams is a scientist and Zimmer's an artist. It feels a little cruel to me. I guess that's. It feels like diminishing of a man's work. I don't particularly give a shit about either of them. They do good work in films and make them better. You don't really think about the score when you're watching them, which you shouldn't. If you're thinking, well, this is a great score, then it's not, you know, you should be just, this is it. You should be, you're on a rollicking thrill ride and the score is doing that. You're not thinking, this is a great bloody score. You're thinking, this is a great action sequence. This is a great fight. And it's all under, it's, you know, the music is doing its part. So yeah, I just think it's, I don't know. I get why you say that, because Zimmer seems, whenever he's chatted about his Batman stuff he did for Nolan, the way he talks about it is it sort of sounds like he's more scientific, and like he wants to experiment and he's going to try all these crazy things just to kind of create some very odd sound. Like he's going to go and try to get down to some quantum level and create some new sound out of instruments that no one's ever heard of. So I'd say, yeah, Zimmer's both, you know, an artist and a scientist. And that's a good thing. And maybe Williams is just more of a, yeah, maybe just more of a populist or whatever, but he's, yeah, might be a bit harsh calling him, not calling him an artist as well.
I just mean that the crowd of St. Paul's liked him more, you know?
Yeah.
And we all know what that means.
Yeah, no, we do.
Yeah, we know.
Right, yeah, good. Hello, and welcome to the Movies You Forgot podcast, the show in which we chat about the movies or films that we forgot we'd even seen in the first place. Joining me, as ever, is the old leaky bucket boy, a man who cannot contain the very simplest of plot lines, things he's seen, when he saw them, what they meant to him. It's Mr. Joe Devine.
Hello. How's it going?
Yeah, it's all right.
Just counting the number of Culkin siblings, there's fucking shitloads.
Culkins, yeah. There is a Culkin in this. Pure Culkin. You seem to be surprised.
Do you want to guess how many Culkins there are? Actually, just how many siblings Macaulay Culkin has?
No, I wanted to know why you were surprised that this was a Culkin.
Because I didn't look at him and think, hey, there's one of them Culkins. I always thought there were only two Culkins. I thought there was Macaulay Culkin and then the one in, you know,
Succession.
The TV series Succession. Who's that? Which one's he? I think he's Kieran Culkin. I didn't know there were other Culkins.
I couldn't remember which Culkin this was. I knew it wasn't Kieran and I knew it wasn't Macaulay. And yeah, it turns out it's Rory. But who has popped up in a fair few other flicks.
Right, yeah.
So let's...
There's also Dakota Culkin, Quinn Culkin, Shane Culkin, Christian Culkin, and Jennifer Adamson. I don't know who that is.
And they're all the sibling Culkins.
I think they're all siblings, yeah. Jennifer Adamson was Kit Culkin's eldest child from a previous relationship with Adina Van Wagoner.
Yeah, she's not a real Culkin.
And she died at 29 years old. How sad.
That's really sad. Really sad. So, on today's episode, in case you hadn't realised, we are doing the 2002 M. Night Shyamalan directed sort of alien invasion flick, Signs.
Mm, yeah.
Starring Mel Gibson as Graham Hess, Joaquin Phoenix as Meryl, his weirdly, hugely younger brother, and the children are Rory Culkin, tiny little wee Rory Culkin, and Abigail Breslin from Little Miss Sunshine. I thought that Dakota Fanning was in this movie. I was
so
convinced
that
this was a Dakota Fanning. And I don't know whether that's because of War of the Worlds.
Maybe that's what it is. I told my wife, she said, "What signs?" when I said we were going to watch it. And I said, "Dakota Fanning's in it."
There's something in that. Something in that. And it probably is just War of the Worlds.
Yeah, I think it maybe is just War of the Worlds, but I bet there's other films that people all think Dakota Fanning was in.
Yeah.
What's that thing the they
Mandela
say, you know,
effect.
About the... Yeah, maybe this is the Dakota effect.
I'd say I think the Fanning effect is a lot nicer.
I'm a big fan of the Fanning effect, particularly on a hot day.
Also, because there's a couple of Fannings. There's Dakota, and then there's also Elle. And they... Huh? Yeah, they get
Fanning siblings.
Yeah, they get quite confusing. I'll think, oh, that's a Dakota Fanning flick. Oh no, wait a minute, Elle Fanning's in that. And for a long time, Dakota Fanning was the Fanning. She was the Fanning.
Yeah, she was the Fanning.
And then Elle kind of came along, and she seemed a sub Fanning. She felt like someone who was riding the coattails of Dakota, but at some point. And I don't want to say it's because Elle Fanning is more attractive, but at some point, Elle Fanning overtook Dakota. Dakota sort of took a step back, wasn't in so much stuff.
Yeah.
And Elle was the prime Fanning.
You think she's become primary Fanning?
Well, she was until now Dakota, she's getting her neck back. She's getting her nose back into the game. And I'd say...
Right. In the Equalizer 3.
They're jostling. Yeah, it's a kind of quite a sub part in that film. And then she's also in, I think she's in some telly stuff,
The Watchers.
Yeah,
is a 2024 American supernatural horror film written and directed
by M. Night's daughter, Ishana
Night Shyamalan. Look at that. Wow.
Yeah, so that's the story of prime Fanning and second Fanning.
We've gone through two different sort of American family siblings. Maybe there's more to come. Nepotism.
Well, we touched upon the Wilsons in the Darjeeling Limited.
Yeah, we did.
So they keep coming. So anyway...
Phoenix, River Phoenix, he's also dead. A bit like...
fuck,
what was
can
her name?
You stop bringing up people who are dead?
Jennifer.
Seriously?
Adamson.
Can you start every time you want to tell a story, the end is, oh, and they're dead.
Yeah.
You know, just because your Zimmer gig was ruined by some douchebag with a phone.
I know.
You seem to want to bring...
Here's, this isn't a siblings familial thing, but here's a kind of two steps of connection game for you. Yeah? Okay, quick one.
Okay.
Rory Culkin, he's in Signs, next to Cherry Jones, who plays Officer Paskey. I recognised her as playing Nan in Succession, the leader of the family that owns that rival media company.
Oh, yeah.
And she's obviously in Succession with Kieran Culkin. So I reckon they would have had good chats on set. Hey, I work with your brother Rory and, you know, that
she's
sort of
double Culkined.
She's double Culkined.
So the question is, who's double Fanninged, who's double Culkined, and who's double Wilsoned? I think double Wilson is a lot easier.
I think we can do double Fanninged. I reckon we can get a double Fanninged because...
Not now.
I'm starting with Denzel Washington.
Well, not now.
Not right now.
No, we can't do that now because that's like a...
I think I might do that now.
That's a pub game.
You don't have to do that now.
Well, like, that's a pub game that you would then just sit for each of us for 5 minutes staring into space.
Right.
Yeah. That doesn't work for the show, does it?
No, of course not.
Okay,
no,
go on. No, give it a go.
Don't worry about it. You can talk. I'm doing it already. I've been doing it the entire time you've been talking. But
using
it's
your
okay.
mind or using the internet?
No, using my vision.
Right, okay.
Is that not allowed? I can't do it with my
you
vision.
You can, just I'd only ever do it with my mind. So this is, just to go over old ground, it's the 2002 flick directed by M. Night Shyamalan and written by... let's go to the Letterboxd. It's 106 mins. And here we go. It's not like they didn't warn us. That's the bit in caps.
Right.
So the sort of thing you'd get to see maybe on a film poster.
Yeah.
A family living on a farm finds mysterious crop circles in their fields, which suggests something more frightening to come. Another classically thin outline from my favourite film app, Letterboxd. So this is M. Night Shyamalan's third film. He's come out. Well, fucking, it's actually technically not his third film. I don't consider the films he did before The Sixth Sense as films, even though they were films. Yeah. And they did come out. I consider the beginning of his career to begin with The Sixth Sense, because that really is the beginning of his career. That's the beginning of his oeuvre as we know it, paranormal like type stuff. So pedantically, I'm not interested in anyone kind of going, well, technically, actually, it's just that, you know, that would make Science's fifth film. I'm not interested.
No, neither am I. I'm not interested either.
Science is his third film. Okay, Sixth Sense is his first film.
Yeah.
He comes out smoking hot after that film. Blew the world away. That was buffo box office. It changed everyone's relationship to the ending of a film. We'd never even realised, you know, what could happen. Everyone just thought the end of a film was for wrapping things up in a nice, neat little red bow. M. Night Shyamalan came aboard and said, oh, well, no, wait a minute. I'm going to change everything you thought what has happened preceding to this point. And,
do you really think that's the case, or are you doing a bit?
I'm being facetious.
Oh, I'm sorry. Because for me, it really was. I'm young, so I hadn't ever seen anything like that before. But you, obviously, you're smarter and older, and you knew.
No. I'm having my cake and eating it too, because I'm using my tone to suggest that is and isn't true. Because I think it was true to, like, you know, to the likes of you, and I think even me. I think I would have been familiar with a surprise ending. But he really made the whole world know about them, and popularized them to such an extent that he's become known for them and very much infamous for their usage. And then following that, he does Unbreakable, which I think is his best film. Bruce Willis.
Oh, yeah.
Samuel Jackson.
I forgot about that.
Let me read.
Samuel Jackson. Yeah, you were reading it. Go on.
I'm going to read.
That bit with the pool.
Amazing bit with the pool. So that's an ordinary man played by Bruce Willis. He's in a train accident at the beginning, and he comes to believe maybe he has superhuman powers.
Right.
And it's a kind of what if. What if someone, you know, had superhuman powers. It's kind of very grounded. That film was fairly successful, but not super, I think it was maybe a bit divisive. And then he follows that up. I think he kind of returns to his spooky roots with film, Signs, Mel Gibson, huge star of the time, and it's Aliens. And I remember this flick being massive.
Right.
But thinking it was very, very silly and a bit shit.
I think it was big, though, wasn't it? It was a big. It got really in the craw of the time.
Yeah, it's later parodied big time in the likes of Scary Movie 3.
Would this be a good time to tell you that I've found two connections between Elle Fanning and Dakota Fanning? Fantastic. Well, the first one is Kristen Stewart. Dakota Fanning is in the Twilight saga with Kristen Stewart. She plays Vampire Jane.
What?
Apparently so.
God, slumming it. Okay.
Yeah, how about that? And Elle Fanning worked with Kristen Stewart in Certain Women 2016, although they weren't in, like, the same scenes.
Okay, wow. Interesting, yeah. Interesting.
And then there's a Sean Penn connection. The Dakota Fanning connection was 2001. The Elle Fanning connection was 2016. I don't think you'd get the 2016 one. I'd never heard of that, so I'll tell you that is The Last Face.
No.
And he directed that film, so they weren't technically in it together, I don't think.
Right, so that's a bit... Was she in... No, that's not... The Gunman?
No, it's from 2001. It's called I Am Sam.
Oh, of course, she's the little kid, and he plays her...
She's the daughter.
She's the daughter.
Yeah.
Oh, dear.
How about that?
Yeah, but not quite. I don't think the L connection is quite so clean, is it?
It's not that clean. And also, I want to admit something as well. I did spend a while trying to find that out myself, but I couldn't. And then when you said that we weren't allowed to use ChatGPT in this episode, I thought, oh, that's a good idea. I'll use ChatGPT. And so it told me. That's how I got it.
That's okay. You can ask it for that. I just meant, like, let's not do a whole bit about where they because we just did a whole... I mean, maybe people like having the same thing over and over and over again, like, you know, John Williams fans. But I like to think of myself more of as a Hans Zimmer type scientist of the podcast realm. Like, really trying to break new ground and do things a little bit differently. I mean, that's just me.
There's so many holes in the Zimmer-Williams argument. If I was a listener to this, I'd be like wet, ready to write in with how wrong this is, this analogy is. Because I'm now thinking, yeah, that's true, but hang on, Hans Zimmer is like, the Interstellar music is the backdrop to like every fucking TikTok video I've ever seen. You know, he couldn't be more mainstream, could he? And yet, in my world, he's a humble artist next to Williams.
he's niche.
Who are we talking about? Oh, M. Night Shyamalan.
Signs. Yeah. I didn't mind rewatching this. You said last week you were like, oh, I remember being really scared by this movie. And you were a little bit nervous. I'd love to hear about your experience of rewatching Signs. Because you're scared. You're like, you know, you're quite scared of stuff.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, I text you towards the end of the film to say, maybe I'm not scared of anything anymore. Maybe it was just, I was scared in my head because of previous experiences. And you said, no, you are still scared. So I didn't watch a horror film in between now and then. But I don't know what on earth I was afraid of in Signs, because frankly, the only thing to be afraid of is how tonally all over the place the film is and how weird and confusing it is. I watched it now and I thought, how could this possibly have held a mainstream audience or a place in the mainstream conversation at the time? Why did it lodge at all? Was it just because he was the director of The Sixth Sense and Unbreakable? Is that why? Because it is insane. It's all over the place. It doesn't make any sense. It's basically quite boring, mostly. There's not really a twist, so I think people will have been upset. There's a bit of a twist, but not really. I think people will have come to expect, where's the twist? What about, where's my twist? You know, they would have been annoyed about that. I really enjoyed it, but it's mental.
Right. I think it was big because I think M. Night, sometimes he has a little knack for tapping into what's going on in the world. This time, he was a bit ahead of his time. Not ahead of his time. He's tapping into
the zeitgeist.
He's tapping into conspiracy theories and crop circles. Now, I remember people chatting about crop circles a bit in the 90s, and it was all a bit of a joke.
Well, they were sort of a very kind of, I was going to say American, but a non-British thing, because we just don't have big enough crops to have crop circles over here. Do you know what I mean? No one's got any crops.
We do. We have some crops, and it was.
Did any of our crops get good? British crops get circled?
Yeah, we got crop circled.
Yeah. I know there's that guy on the side of the hill with the massive cock. That guy. I go past him on the train sometimes, but I don't think he's a crop circle.
When was the last time you heard from your father?
Daddy.
What's interesting here is, I think the premise of the movie, what it's about, is actually quite interesting. And I don't think I really considered it when I watched it. It's the question of faith. Does God exist if aliens are about? That's quite an interesting question. I don't remember that being much in the discourse so much. And I think that people would latch onto that. And then he packages it up with crop circles.
He attaches it to something of the time.
The whole notion of the crop circles and the actual invasion is really stupid. It's really badly done. As you say, the tone is all over the place. And there's lots of odd scenes. Maybe M. Night Shyamalan was a forerunner in terms of, like, when you've got kids who are super, super smart and more adult than the adults. Because he certainly has that in The Sixth Sense. And he's really got it here with Rory and Rory Culkin and Abigail Breslin. They are like little grown-ups. And now that is such a trope of everything. You know, it's the kid who's wise beyond their years. But so, I'm going to say, never mind how sort of ham-fisted and shit the film is. In terms of the idea of it, about the question it asks, faith, can you believe in God? Does God exist if there are extraterrestrials? Do you think it does anything?
Does it move the needle?
But yeah, is it? Do you feel like the film is actively engaged in that question?
To a certain extent, because in the sense that it really is the only thing that the film is asking, because the film isn't asking anything else. So in that sense, it is actively engaged in that question. I would say M. Night's answer to that question is the only answer you could have, which is yes, faith does play a role after aliens come. I think that's indisputable, because whilst, you know, the advancements of science and modern science have ebbed away slowly at the number of people who have faith or are religious, generally speaking, it's done a terrific job, this is faith now, of finding ways around it, you know? Like the dinosaurs, for example, if we were having this conversation and we could somehow have a Hollywood movie made just before we found dinosaurs, and in the same way that we think aliens might come, there was some sort of prescience about we're going to find something under the ground, yeah? We'd be having the same conversation where we go, oh, but what about when we find the dinosaurs and they indisputably prove that the story in the Bible isn't true? Won't then all the people who believe in the Bible, won't they have to acknowledge that, and won't faith be eradicated? Oh, no. Oh, no, it turns out, no, that isn't how it works at all. Or in any number of other circumstances where something has been discovered or invented or realised or discussed in, you know, the last few hundred years, which would seem to negate totally and obviously the things that are written in the book. And yet it doesn't make any difference. So I think when aliens do come, when people have less control, they need faith more.
Yeah, I mean, it would have been good if the film had that kind of cynical angle to it. It's actually a quite mawkish, love that word, mawkish. Yeah. Mawkish, I used it loads last week.
It is mawkish, though.
Mawkish view of folksy, you know, of course he's there. It's not coincidences, yeah? It's faith, it's connection. God's looking out for you. And hand, what I find baffling in that with that mindset is that the person, God, who has done all these things and given you these clues, has then also in charge of sending the alien as well. Like he sends the test. He sends the test, and then he also sends the answers to the test earlier on. And then you're supposed to have remembered the answers from before. And then when the test
didn't
arrives,
find the answer, bang, dead. Fuck you.
You rubbish, you failed the God test. I gave you your dying wife. I gave her the answer and she told it to you in her dying breath. And if you can't remember that when an alien is looking at you, then so help me God.
Do you not remember, Mel, when I separated your wife's torso from her lower half and then she whispered a clue to you that would maybe come in handy later? Although you could have just told Meryl to hit the alien with the bat. It doesn't make any difference. You know, it's like, there's no connection between these things. So
that was always my huge problem with the end of that film. Spoiler alert.
Can I just say also, I'm so sorry, what aliens, are capable of intergalactic travel, but can't get through a fucking door? What aliens are these? In what world is this an acceptable kind of alien to come here? It's not an acceptable alien, M. Night. I'm sorry. They can use doors. They can do space travel. What the fuck?
Well, no, they've only got like a thumb and two long fingers, so they kind of struggle. They struggle with the doorknobs. Yeah? It's just very simple bits of...
Sure.
But I was thinking a bit more kindly to that twist. It's less of about the bat, you know, the memory of what the wife says. Use the bat, Mel.
Swing away, Meryl.
It's more of a Mel needs he needs a couple of clues to show him that life does have meaning and moments connect and they matter. So the reason why she died and was severed in half and said that mattered, and the reason why little Rory Culkin has asthma.
Yeah,
that's a good thing. You might think it's a bad thing. No, it's a good thing. It means he can't breathe in the poison from the aliens.
It's cool, yeah. And also, it's worth saying as well, like, big themes for young Rory Culkin, whose older sibling had tragically passed away probably just the year before they were filming.
Yeah, so that's sad, man. That is sad.
That is sad.
That is so sad.
I thought that was sad.
I mean, what other M. Night films have you seen? I went on a little M. Night binge following Signs because I'd never really rewatched any of his flicks. The only one of his that I've ever come back to with any kind of satisfaction is, oh, actually, no, yeah, two, Sixth Sense and Unbreakable. So yeah, I'd never seen The Village, so I thought I'd watch that. And I rewatched Split, which I only saw the once when it came out.
No, I've seen The Sixth Sense, I've seen Unbreakable, Signs, The Village, and I've seen After Earth, that one with
the stinker, yeah,
the real stinker. Is that's with the Wills,
yeah, and Jaden and
the Smiths. Sorry, yeah, that was a shit one. I have to say, the only M. Night I've really enjoyed was The Village, which I know people sort of didn't think was as good as The Sixth Sense and Unbreakable, but I really liked The Village. I think there's loads of good actors in it, and I think it's a really novel concept. I rewatched it about 2 years ago. It doesn't really like fully stand up, but it's still on 2 feet for me. And I think it's quite emotional. I think it's a really well-made film. And you watched it for what, the first time the other week?
First time, and also knowing what the twist is, although it doesn't really affect most of the film,
no.
Which is quite odd. I think you want a twist to affect everything you've seen a little bit more.
So when you watch it again?
But I mean, I thought The Village was as boring as Signs, so it's odd that you kind of gave The Village a pass and not Signs. The actors are great. William Hurt's in it, Sigourney Weaver.
Yeah.
Joaquin Phoenix. These actors, obviously, it looks like they invariably come back for two Shyamalans.
Yeah.
Because he's in Signs and he's like, I want some more, I'll be in The Village. And then in The Village, Bryce Dallas Howard is in that, and then she turns up in Lady in the Water.
Yeah.
So they, you know, he's obviously, people like working with him. But there's a really interesting notion in The Village. He's got another great idea, and the idea is, what will a community, a rural community in the past, what will they do to protect everyone who lives there? This kind of idyllic, Amish, almost Amish type community. How far will the elders go to keep everyone safe from the scary outside world?
Yeah. What's beyond the entrance to the forest?
Yeah, and so the use of folklore and stories, fear of the other. I just felt like the film doesn't really explore any of that in any detail, just kind of just has scenes unfurl. He shoots stuff in a fairly interesting way.
It is shot very well. I think it's definitely more frightening than Signs. Like, it's... I really like the camera work in that film. I also think Adrian Brody does quite a good job playing the character who obviously has learning difficulties or something, and actually plays quite a big role in the plot.
Yeah, I don't think you can do that anymore.
No, I don't think you can.
Big Mel. Mel Gibson.
Oh, the Meliest of Mels.
He was a huge star for a very long time. He's come unstuck with anti-Semitic rants, calling a police officer sugar tits in a drunken rage. You know, let's just talk about his career before the fall from grace, because that's really the interesting bit about Gibson.
Sure. And at some point, I'm sure we'll do a Gibson-directed movie and we can talk about Gibson, the director.
Yeah, we should. That would be interesting. Because, I mean, I'm not ever going to watch Passion of the Christ.
Right.
Or is it just called The Passion?
I think it's called Passion of the Christ. I don't know. Maybe The Passion is the shortened version of it. That was the one I was going to try to get you with, just because it's so weird.
It's just, ugh.
And it's all I watched in my A-level religious studies class, because my teacher was sadly sectioned and they replaced him with various different substitute teachers, most of whom taught PE, who would leave us alone in the classroom and we would watch The Passion of the Christ over and over again. So it would be fun for me to revisit that, but we can do a different male if you want.
Well, I haven't seen it, so I like the phrase sadly sectioned. Very alliterative.
Sometimes people are happily sectioned. You know, sometimes people section themselves, you know? I did that once when I was in my summer pretending to be a pizza.
Okay, fuck me, that's...
Is that not funny, Joe? Oof. Sectioned as in sliced into different pieces?
Yeah.
I sectioned myself.
The problem is, if you're the pizza in that... Yeah, if you're the pizza, I'm now like, it's like a Ratatouille movie. Like, what, are you talking as a pizza?
Yeah.
And also, how can a pizza cut itself up? It doesn't make sense. The joke just falls to pieces. Like you do.
Oh. Yeah. Hello, it's a me. I'm a pizza. I fall into pieces. In the sections. Yeah. Anyway, what kind of things did Big Mel say? Oh, you've got
here
one.
Here you go. The only way the joke works is if you say, oh, that was like the time I worked in the summer as a Cenobite.
As a what?
A Cenobite.
It's a Hellraiser. What's that?
It's a Hellraiser reference. Oh. And anyone, yeah, they were all like Pinhead. They're all cut into sections.
Oh, I didn't get that one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, my summer serving in hell as a Cenobite.
Yeah, that would have been cool.
Yeah.
If I'd said that. Instead, I said that thing about the pizza.
I mean, why do you think he spanned so much time and was such a movie star? You know, Australian masculinity.
Sure.
I mean, sort of handsome. Do you think he's considered
He was definitely considered very handsome, which is why he was cast in the film called What Women Want. But also, he's got a movie star appeal to him. He's just so likeable. There's some, I mean, not necessarily in all of his films, but I think in most of them, he excretes this sort of juicy serum that makes me go, Big Mel. You know, he encompasses all of the American psyche just personified into one human being. Yeah, he's got a great big smile on his face, and at times he really is so smooth as to make me feel like I'm drinking one of those very expensive Japanese whiskies that just kind of rolls right back down the back of the throat and no big deal. You know what I'm saying? And it makes me feel warm. And I think about how big his arms are and I think, wouldn't it be nice to be clutched against the breast of Mel? I think that. And then Mel would whisper something to me, say, don't worry. Don't worry about whatever you're worrying about. I'm here now. I'm Big Mel. I'm going to look after you. And I feel that way. But then there's a little twitch in the corner of his mouth. And I think, wait, hang on, something just slipped? Was it a mask? The answer is yes, it was a mask. And also, no, it wasn't a mask at the same time. That's the thing about Mel. He's sort of like cognitive dissonance and the American psyche all in one, personified into a human being. And he's confused with all of his faith stuff. And that I feel like that comes across in his performances. I don't know how, but I think it must do. So, you know, and also Big Mel, he disgraced himself for a while, but he's sort of in and around it, and he's got this, you know, maybe we'll talk about it more in the Big Mel directorial episode, but I feel like there's something there to Big Mel that is more than just the alcoholic anti-Semite, you know?
Well, I think the times we live in are very stressful, and people want to laugh. To enjoy themselves, you know, forget their worries, and things are a little silly, you know.
Great. Should we play the box office game?
Oh, I'd love to play the box office game. For the film Signs, that's what we were talking about, wasn't it? I'm fascinated by this one. I know I say that every week, but I actually am every week, but specifically this week. So can we start, please, with your guess for the brackets estimated budget for the film Signs?
There's the most, you know, they've got some shonky but maybe expensive special effects with the aliens. Most of the budget would have gone on Mel Gibson's pay packet,
right?
I would wager.
Yeah.
And he's going to get something like, well, if Jim Carrey's getting 20 million for a flick, you know Mel Gibson's going to insist on getting something similar.
Sure.
So 20 mil to shoot it, and then another 10 mil for special effects. So what's that, 50 mil to mil, let's go say the budget's 50 mil.
Right.
And I think I might have over-egged it, because I feel like Shyamalan likes a small budget.
You've actually under-egged it.
What?
The estimated budget for Signs, and I don't know why, is $72 million.
I mean, is that money on screen?
Well, that's partly, look, this is partly why I was interested by this one, because I don't really see $72 million on screen. I'm sure it's there. I'd love to have an expert explain it to me.
It's in M. Night Shyamalan's back pocket, is where, that's where it is.
Maybe. I mean, he did play a part in the film.
I like him in this film.
I think he's a good actor. I think he's picked the most challenging character to play, which is quite funny, but he does a good job.
People always razzed on him for like, oh, he's put himself in his movies again. It's like, yeah, I think he always wanted to be an actor.
Yeah.
And he's pretty good.
I would 100% put myself in my own films. Of course I would do that. No, do you know why? Because no one else is putting me in a film. So if I want to be in a film, I've got to put myself in one. You know, seems completely logical to me.
That's partly why Quentin Tarantino became a director, because he really did. That's what he wanted, to be an actor. And no one would put him in a movie because he was a shit actor.
Opening weekend, US and Canada. Okay. August the 4th, 2002.
A year after 9/11. The world's different.
I mean, you jest about this, right? You referenced at the beginning, you did say at the beginning that he was tapping into conspiracy. He was tapping into a vibe, right? This film releases less than a year after 9/11, and it is about a family in a small town in America that have no control and limited information about an immediate invasion, and they just have to protect themselves and their homes. Like, you don't, I think that has that. There's some resonance there.
Yeah, I mean, you put it a lot better than me when I was talking about, I was tapping into something. I didn't even realise how spot on I was.
Yeah, yeah, you were.
But you're right, you're smart. You're a smart guy. This is his 9/11 movie. Yeah, it was filmed before the events of 9/11.
Yeah.
It was in pre-production when 9/11 hit.
It was the late spring and summer of 2001 is when they filmed it. Production began in early mid-April and continued through the summer, wrapping up in early August 2001.
Great. And they were like, we've done it, we've shot a flick and we could tap right into this. Right, so I think it does well.
Oh, I'll tell you what, several critics and viewers have drawn connections between Signs and the September 11th attacks, particularly in terms of the film's themes of fear, faith and a sense of a world in crisis, although Signs was filmed months before 9/11 and released just a month before August 2002. It is exploratory of how individuals and families confronted existential threats, and that resonated deeply with audiences living through the aftermath of 9/11.
Well, we, you know, we see signs everywhere, don't we? We see signs in the movie Signs.
Yeah, yeah.
We look for a sign, and then we see the movie Signs come on, and we go, ooh, is that a sign? Is Signs a sign? No, it's not. It's a coincidence.
Well, the question is, though, how many people saw Signs?
Lots.
And the opening weekend in the US and Canada?
Lots.
What territory are we talking?
We're talking...
You always say jumper territory. That's your favourite territory. Sometimes you say Logan territory. That's a big territory.
I think it's more like Logan territory than jumper territory.
Ooh.
I'm going to go... I think people are going to go and see this. It's Mel, Shyamalan, it's aliens, it's got a poster, it's got mystery. It's that people are coming out. They're coming out for this. And I think I'm going to say what I said for the budget, because I've done that before historically, and sometimes it's worked out. I'm going to say it made 50 mil.
Well, M. Night's gone one better, Richmond, because the movie took $60 million on its opening weekend.
I like how close I am in that.
Very close.
Not within the 10%.
How about that? Does it matter now that we can't necessarily see the $72 million on screen? Because he's made 60 of it back in the opening weekend. Very impressive.
Yeah, and I think this is going to be one of those exact 10 times XG type thingamabobs. Let's just go nice and clean. The Joe Devine route, $600 million.
Well, I'm sorry to tell you that it did underperform its XG.
Oh.
Still very impressive. But it made $408 million.
That's quite under.
That's a little under, yeah. And I think, you know, if you were just a normal person or you were listening to another film podcast, for example, you might think $408 million from a $72 million budget, that's terrific, great news, yeah? No, we know. We know here, the listeners of this podcast, the Movies You Forgot podcast, and me and you, the co-hosts, yeah? You're the host, I'm the co-host. We know that movie has underperformed its XG. And the producers know too, because I guarantee you they're using these mad metrics in the same way that we are.
Your XG 10 times figure, isn't that from taken from too small a sample of movies to then say that this is what a movie should do? What
yes.
What if it's just that the movies that you've decided it, that's what it is. It's just a nice number.
No, absolutely.
Okay, great. Good.
But I think the spirit of it is in keeping with the truth.
And it's underperformed XG in comparison to other flicks of the same sort of heft. So, you know.
Yeah. I mean, that's where the analogy breaks down, really, because I think what I'm actually saying in relation to this film is that I might expect that to do 10x, because that's what we've seen in our small sample size. It does less than that, which makes me think that maybe it wasn't that well reviewed and that audiences word got around that it's not quite your sixth sense, right? So then maybe people thought, well, I'll wait until it comes out on video and didn't go to see it. And that would suggest that that is a rational reaction to what the film actually was, which would mean that the film is kind of actually performing its XG as opposed to underperforming it, because you would expect it to do that on the basis of what it is. So that's where the analogy breaks down. But it underperforms its 10x. Its 10x rule, for sure.
Yeah. But, And on its own terms, that's a pretty good return.
Oh, yeah. The studio's happy. It's
Boffo box office.
It's Boffo, for sure. But I wanted more.
Game. Fine, another game. Oh, I bet people are sick of games. The amount of games you've fucking thrown in today. Let's play the final game. The final game, the game where one of us reads out a list of movies they forgot.
Game.
The other one to decide our next flick, next week's flick.
Yes.
I plumbed you. Golden Duck plumbed you with Signs.
Yes, you did.
You know, choose your weapon.
You hit me right down the middle with that one. Okay, it's my turn this week. So I've got five attempts to get you, and if I can't get you, then we'll go to the communal list.
Maybe throw in a couple of female directors or films that about the female experience for once.
Right.
You know, you tend to be very cock heavy.
Right.
And that's not just in the list. That's in
your
trousers.
That's on account of my heavy cock.
Yeah.
Know? Yeah. Hmm.
Hmm. This is big. You need this.
Yeah. I want a golden duck, but I don't know that I'm going to get one with this list. There's one on here that I think might golden duck. I think you might not have seen it because it's one of those films. It came out at a time when you were already like well into adulthood and it won a big Oscar. And I think you might have swerved it because it's pretty normie. It's The King's Speech with Colin Firth.
Oh dear. Oh dear. I mean, I think this is a Cannon Plum Golden
is
Duck,
it? Yeah.
Mate.
I knew it was. That's why I was worried to say it. I mean, it's fine. Listen, let's just do it. Let's just do it. I think I only watched it in the cinema. I only watched it in the cinema.
It's not going to be a tough watch. I think this is going to be, it's going to go down real smooth.
A stuttering Colin Firth.
Yeah. I mean, is it okay for people to have stutters?
I don't know.
In movies that if they don't have stutters?
No, you're absolutely right. I don't know. And I can't wait to find out when you tell me next week.
Me neither. So yeah, that was the Signs episode.
Oh yeah.
You know, what signs have you seen on your walk whilst you've been listening to this episode? Things have appeared in your peripheral vision. You know, what happened this morning when you were making your breakfast or that cup of tea? Did your partner or your child say something, you know, spooky or evocative? What's happened at work? Is anything kind of bleeding through and suggesting things that will happen in the future? Think about it. Yeah, think about it. After
Melwood.
You've listened to this. Melwood, Joe Wood.
Yeah, I like that, actually. Also, we should say that thing you've been thinking about, that thing that you don't know, the decision, you've got to make a decision about it, yeah? Fucking do it. Do it. Yeah?
Yeah, do it. All right, say bye, Joe.
Bye, Joe.
I hope they're not thinking about killing themselves. That would be not good for numbers.